Calling all distilleries, packaging companies, and designers. The American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine are thrilled to announce that we are now accepting entries for the 4th Annual Craft Spirits Packaging Awards. Sponsored by the Glass Packaging Institute, the awards celebrate excellence and creativity in the design of craft spirits labels and packaging. Visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org or CraftSpiritsMag.com to learn more and enter by November 20th. We'd also like to say a special thanks to Lincoln County Reserve, one of our sponsors for our first ever American Craft Spirits Festival. Crafted to excellence from their trees to your table, Lincoln County Reserve is in northern Wisconsin, and they are committed to tapping their own trees as well as buying from local sugar houses to craft the finest 100% pure maple syrup. Lincoln County Reserve has pure, bourbon barrel aged, and cinnamon maple syrup for sale. Learn more at lcrmaplesyrup.com.
The most important thing I've learned is that that the team is important. You know, you oftentimes see a head distiller like me, you know, kind of representing a brand and educating people on it. But that person is no more than like a coach of a baseball team. You know, there's a bunch of players on that team, all that have a specific impact, and they make a difference. But the coach does the press conference at the end of the day. And that's something that I feel very strongly about, is that a product is only as good as the entire team that makes it.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by Murphy Quint of Cedar Ridge Distillery in Swisher, Iowa. As head distiller and director of operations, Murphy oversees the distillery, winery, vineyards, campus grounds, and facilities. As Cedar Ridge is one of the few winery and distilleries in the United States, Murphy has gained a unique understanding of how the influence of wine can impact the flavor profile of whiskey. During his tenure at Cedar Ridge Distillery, Murphy has helped the distillery overcome legacy brands to become the number one selling bourbon in Iowa. In this episode, Murphy chats with Craft Spirits Magazine Editor-in-Chief Jeff Cialetti about the growth of American single malt whiskey, the success of Cedar Ridge's bourbon, the distillery's partnership with the band Slipknot, and much more. To start, Jeff asked Murphy to talk about the gravitation to American single malt whiskey.
We've been a bourbon distillery since the beginning of time, and for the longest time that when we did any sort of interview or any sort of press activity, it was always about the bourbon. Lately, though, for about the last year, it's all single malt. That's, anyone who reaches out, they're very focused on that. And that's really exciting to see. So, you know, first thing first, I want to mention there seems to be a lot more media interest in American single malt whiskey than prior years. And there is definitely a noticeable shift on that front, which is very exciting. And I think that is kind of helping consumers gravitate towards the category in general. Now, where are they coming from, you know, outside of that? There's really only theory. I mean, we're getting to the point where there's a little bit of data out there that can make certain suggestions, but really it's still pretty early on. And so there's just a lot of theory. And what I've come up with, and what a lot of my, distilling friends have come up with as well, is that it seems like most people are actually coming from bourbon to the category of American single malt. That is the opposite of what a lot of us imagined was going to happen, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. It seemed to be very, you know, we seemed to be pretty positive that most of these consumers were going to come from Scotch and be willing to try American single malt. And that hasn't so much been the case. A lot of people that are into Scotch are still very into Scotch. Myself included, I love a good Scotch. But what's happening, though, is people over the last few years that have entered the bourbon category and really immersed themselves in it, really geeked out about bourbon, if you will, what they've done is there's been a progression, you know, intro to bourbon, maybe low proof. Then they want to try some cask finished bourbon, and then they want to try higher proof bourbon. And, you know, they keep kind of climbing this ladder and looking for something new, something exciting. And once they kind of reach the top of bourbon, they start to explore other categories, and American single malt's right there to catch them. the reason why I think it's such an attractive category to the people who have gone through that bourbon progression is because there is so much content. There is so much room to explore within the process of each American single malt, and there's such a wide range of flavors within the category. So I think as a person kind of starts out in bourbon and grows into a full-on whiskey geek, if you will, once they get to that whiskey geek status, that range of American single malt, the process behind it is particularly attractive to them. So long story short, I'm seeing that a lot of people are going through a bourbon progression and then transferring over to American single malt.
But they're not abandoning bourbon, though. They're just
absolutely not, from what I've seen. It bourbon still runs the show, and you know that, to be fully honest with you, my distillery relies on that. I mean, we're mainly a bourbon distillery, and we want people to continue to support bourbon. It's the spirit of America, made from beautiful Iowa corn. You know, so we're all about that, and consumers still seem to be very interested in bourbon, but they once they kind of grow within that category, they are more likely to experiment with other categories. You know, they're once they get to the point where they understand mash bills, they start to understand certain yeast varieties. You know, they start to understand a little bit more than just, you know, this is bourbon, it's made from corn. You know, once they kind of start to become educated on it, they're more likely to explore other categories. And, you know, a lot of times there's been rye whiskey there's been wheat whiskey to explore. But I think this American single malt thing, the range that it presents as far as flavor profile goes, and the fact that the media is talking about it like a lot right now, I think that is kind of pushing people to American single malt from bourbon. They're not leaving the category, but they're more likely to dip their toes in the water once they kind of graduate through bourbon.
And you noted that it surprised you that the drinkers weren't coming from single malt scotch. Yeah. Would you say that is possibly related to the fact that scotch drinkers tend to be more brand loyal? They tend to be more traditionalist. Is that?
Yeah, good question. And it's a little bit of that, but it's also, it's tough because I don't want to make any generalized statements as far as age goes. I think, you know, older people, younger people drink all categories for sure. But there is definitely a generational difference when it comes to things like, for instance, baby boomers versus millennials or even other ones. I know that the millennial generation is much more likely, let's talk about beer. When they go to a beer bar, they're more likely to order three or four different beers. Whereas, you know, generations from 10, 20 years ago, they might just keep reordering the same beer. The younger crowd is a little bit more likely to explore new categories and be less loyal to one specific brand than, you know, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. So that's one thing that's really happening there. I think that people that were drinking single malt 20, 30 years ago are going to be in the older generations, and they're more likely, they've kind of found what they want at this point. They're less likely to explore new categories. Not all of them by any means, but they're just less likely with any brand in particular, whether it's whiskey or any sort of consumer good. The younger generations are more likely to explore. And I think that the younger generations, they kind of came up while American single malt was being developed here. So they were more likely to have their first interaction with single malt as an American single malt, as opposed to scotch, which 20 years ago, it was almost entirely scotch.
And now let's talk about the bourbon a little bit. Obviously you have a very, very popular bourbon. I mean, it's pretty much still what keeps the lights on there, I would imagine. And, yeah. And there was a moment you did sort of overtake, who was it? Was it Maker's Mark you overtook as the number one selling bourbon in Iowa, or is it somebody?
Yeah, I think that was in 2020. We became I'm pretty sure it was 2020, give or take a year. We became the number one selling bourbon in the state of Iowa. So we got past both Jim Beam and Maker's Mark. And we still to this day are the only craft distillery to do that, I believe. We still maintain that position. And so, like you said, we're still very focused on building bourbon. You know, it makes sense to do that where we're at because we're in the state of Iowa and bourbon by law is made from at least 51% corn. And we happen to be the corn state. So all that makes perfect sense. And we are still very heads down on that. We're kind of building a side thing in the American single malt category. We want to diversify a little bit, if you will, and participate in multiple categories.
And the sort of the performance of your bourbon and as well as your other spirits, is that a testament to the consumer's gravitation towards all things local? And would you say that Iowa drinkers are very passionate about things that are produced locally?
And I'll harp on this one, going a little tangent. I mean, not only Iowans, but Midwesterners in general, in my case, specifically Iowans, we get overlooked a lot. And I think that that really frustrates people, myself very much included. Don't get me wrong. I love the East Coast. I love the West Coast. There's so much cool stuff going on there. But a lot of people, they kind of write us off and they fly over us, whether we're in, you know, Iowa, Missouri, you know, Minnesota, whatever. They just kind of fly over us and go coast to coast. And that's really unfortunate because there's a lot of really cool things happening here. And so, you know, specifically in Cedar Ridge's case, focusing specifically on the state of Iowa, when we got in this business and we started producing bourbon made from Iowa corn and doing this really cool thing in the state of Iowa, I think people were very quick to get out here and support. Iowans really wanted to support because they wanted something loud that they could be proud of. They wanted the people on the coast to see, hey, you know, we're doing really cool stuff here as well. And I think that is why people supported us early on and ultimately what carried us to that number one spot. I mean, you know, that was kind of the foundation. I mean, there's many other things. Like, for instance, we have a very, very skilled team of distillers. We put out a quality product and, you know, that we have a very competitive price point, things like that. But ultimately, what got us that momentum and built the foundation there was the fact that Iowans are taking pride in us, and they wanted something that they could take pride in and be loud about. And that's what Cedar Ridge has provided.
And I wanted to hear a little bit about how the Slipknot partnership came about. Kind of go into that a little bit, because, you know, there are a number of smaller distilleries that have been partnering with particularly recording artists. So I want to kind of hear how the whole Slipknot thing came about, because it typically wasn't the sort of thing you really did before until.
We didn't do anything. It was very foreign to us when it happened. We didn't do anything like it at that point in time, but whiskey and music, a tale as old as time. It's something that goes really well together. And kind of how that happened, this would have been 2018, 2019, somewhere in there, definitely pre-pandemic. We received an email from just leadership of the band Slipknot. I believe their manager, Bob, reached out and just mentioned that they were, you know, they're whiskey fans. They were interested in getting in the whiskey industry and creating their own product. And I know they reached out to a few different distilleries, some that are very big legacy distilleries. You know, they just mentioned that they had interest. Should we sit down and grab dinner and talk about it? And we obviously obliged and took it to the next step and quickly realized, I mean, as we were sitting there having dinner and a few cocktails, that it made perfect sense. You know, they're an Iowa-based band. They were founded here. They've been very proud of the state of Iowa, and that's exactly what Cedar Ridge is. And like I was just saying, I mean, Iowans, like, we're constantly on this thing. We're constantly like, hey, pay attention to us. We're doing cool stuff. Why is everyone, you know, why aren't people paying attention to us? And so when two, you know, Iowan businesses like that or Iowan brands get together, it creates something special. And I think that's ultimately why they decided to go with Cedar Ridge and why we wanted to partner with them, is because it's a really good Iowa strong message, two cool, you know, brands and businesses showing people what we can do based out of this state. So you know, once we got going, things really took off. I mean, the head of the band, Clown, he goes by Clown on stage. It's not his real name, obviously. He came out and we tasted through a bunch of barrels together. We did some sample blends. The cool thing about the Slipknot project with Cedar Ridge is that Clown in particular was and is still to this day very involved. I mean, he did come up with the blend of 60% bourbon, 40% rye. I mean, he did come up with all the proofs for the two different products. We have some seasonals as well. He, you know, was hands-on with the label design. So, I mean, he's not the type of person, he just puts his name on something because he knows it'll sell. He truly wanted to be involved with the process and the product. He's a very artistic person. He's truly the most creative person I've ever met in my life. And he wanted to be very hands-on. So that was something very attractive to me personally, was that it wasn't just using his name. He's going to be involved. And so, that's kind of how we got going. And it's, you know, it's been a long ride since then. We've done a lot of fun stuff. We've, you know, gone to Louder Than Life Fest with them. We've been, you know, backstage at a number of concerts while doing promotional events, and it's been really neat.
And what's the response been? Is it mostly like fans that are drinking it, or new people discovering it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, it definitely started out as fans, as you'd imagine it would. I mean, that's how the brand kind of got its foundation, was, hey, this is from the band Slipknot, and obviously fans are going to hop on it first. And we knew that that would happen, but both parties, Cedar Ridge and Slipknot, we knew that eventually, in order for this to have any legs and have any promise, we need whiskey consumers to buy this product and be genuinely interested in it, rather than just fans of Slipknot. If only Slipknot fans are buying Slipknot whiskey, it's a t-shirt, it's a poster, you know, it's just another Slipknot item. And nobody wanted to do that. They wanted to have something that was well respected. There's an actual process behind it, and that it's geared towards whiskey fans. So there has definitely been a transition over time, but we've definitely got the support of whiskey consumers at this point.
Last time I visited your distillery was January 2020, about a month and a half before the world shut down.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to talk about what's happened since then and things that have changed that you've observed in consumer habits and stuff during the pandemic, and things that kind of carried over to the present moment that are now kind of driving trends for the foreseeable future. So is there anything that you've noticed that, you know, any habits that have changed, any like favoring one product over another, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to pinpoint everything exactly, but I mean, I will say that the industry is night and day, at least from being within the industry, you know, someone operating within the industry, it is night and day post-pandemic versus pre-pandemic. And I don't really know entirely why that is, but I mean, even when I talk with other distillery reps or distilleries in general, you know, we'll say you're still focused on pre-pandemic numbers, or, you know, you're having trouble adapting to post-COVID life, because things really did change a lot. And it's tough to really point at specific things. I mean, I can definitely name one or two. One thing that has absolutely changed is education. When the world was shut down for a while there, I mean, people got into stuff, just stuff in general. I mean, some people did a million puzzles. Some people, you know, got way into video games. But the people that got into whiskey, they got into it in a big way. I mean, you know, there was a day one there, but quickly they progressed to the point where they knew what mash bills were. They knew what yeast does. They know the difference between on-grain fermentation and off-grain fermentation. People really went deep within the category. And so coming out of the pandemic, we've definitely seen a shift as far as consumer education goes. And that's really, really exciting for us as producers, because it allows us to differentiate our products a little bit more now that people have a greater understanding of what those differences actually do and what they mean. So that's been something fun. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I mean, and you would know this from, you know, being affiliated with ACSA and things like that, is that there are so many distilleries now, so many distilleries in the United States. And pre-pandemic, there were a lot too, but it's like, it seems like every day more and more come online. And a lot of them are getting to the point now where they're good and they're putting out really good products. And that's really exciting to see, but it has created a slightly more saturated market. And so we're at this weird point now where consumer education and interest is at an all-time high, and the market saturation is also at an all-time high. And so everyone's trying to kind of find their niche. Everyone's trying to find their place on the shelf, their differentiator, and stuff like that. So it's creating a weird, beautiful chaos within the industry right now. And more so than ever, as a producer, as a distillery manager, it's important to know what you're good at, why it matters to the consumer, and to truly have a strategy on how you're going to proceed moving forward. I mean, when we opened up back in 2005, I mean, that really wasn't it wasn't the case, believe it or not. This whole craft distilling thing was so new back then in 2005. I mean, we were called a micro distillery back then, not a craft distillery. That term wasn't even like a thing yet. And back then, I mean, it's like you needed so much less strategy. It was like, well, we're going to produce this product for X, we're going to sell it for Y. And, you know, we're just going to do a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And now you have to have a built out perfect strategy on how you're going to proceed because the market is saturated, the consumer is educated, and they're always looking for something new.
So where do you see Cedar Ridge in that, you know, that point of differentiation that really resonates with consumers and how, you know, they choose yours over somebody else's?
Yeah, and you know, that's actually something that we've been talking about a lot lately. I mean, there's a few different things that we do here, but one thing is that we always try to have a different element in our production, a differentiator in our production process that is actually going to have a bit of an impact. I've mentioned this a number of times, that one of my all-time favorite quotes is from the movie Moneyball. Billy Beane is in a meeting with his team of baseball scouts. He's the manager of the Oakland A's, or the general manager of the Oakland A's. And he says, you know, if we're going to play like the Yankees in here, we're going to lose to the Yankees out there. Basically, he runs a small baseball team and he's going up against a big baseball team. And if he's going to do the things the exact same way as the big baseball team, they're going to crush him every time. They've got to think differently. And so that's one thing that I have written on my whiteboard. I think about it every single day. And so in our process, we do a few things on that are just different. Our bourbon, for instance, is lautered. It's a lautered bourbon. We do it off-grain fermentation, off-grain distillation. That's very uncommon for a bourbon. It's basically bourbon being produced like a single malt. So that's a unique element that we can always carry on and talk about. The way that we age our products in non-climate controlled pole sheds in the state of Iowa, where we see temperature swings of over 100 degrees. I mean, that's going to have an impact, and it's something that we can talk about with our educated consumers. So there's those things, but then there's also one of the things that I find most attractive that we can really lean on, and especially when we get in the world of single malt, is that we're a winery distillery combination, which is actually quite rare. And so we have all these fun casks at our disposal that we can utilize for finishing our whiskey in, whether it's bourbon, single malt, or rye. We can utilize these casks. So, you know, if we empty 10 red wine barrels this morning, we can fill them up this afternoon while they're still fresh and wet on the interior. So there's a lot of advantages there, and we can utilize all those when we're communicating to our consumer, whether it's in person, you know, through social media or whatever the mode may be, but we can utilize those when we're communicating and it has an impact.
And as a wine producer and distillery, are you a believer in terroir in whiskey?
We should talk a little bit on this, because am I a believer? Absolutely. I think it is a real thing. Now, how important it is to any specific distillery is up to them, in my opinion. So where do I even want to go with this? I mean, you know, if we were in a state or a region that grew a lot of barley, we would probably try to hang our hat on that the same way that we do in the state of Iowa with our corn. You know, we have a lot of pride in the fact that the corn we use in our bourbon is from the state of Iowa. We're dedicated to that. It's important to us. We do not grow a lot of barley here. And so therefore, I mean, by default, the terroir is not going to, it's not going to be as present in our product. I mean, we could have some uniqueness due to the way that we age our product and things like that, but going all the way to the grain, there's going to be a gap there, because the grain that we're utilizing for our single malt in general is not from the state of Iowa. So I was writing a piece on this actually fairly recently. And I am a big believer, but it is not important to what we're doing at Cedar Ridge with our single malt in particular, because we're actually focusing on a different element of production. Our single malt, we're really focusing on unique cask finishes and vatting our malt. We're doing a cool vatted malt that's a marriage of many different finishing casks of single malt. And by the time you're marrying different single malts together, you're using different malts, you're using different finishing casks, by the time you've got all that going on, the flavor of the grain, the flavor of the land that it came from, it's going to be masked to the point where a consumer's not really going to be able to pick up on it. So they will be able to pick up on sherry influence and port cask influence and things like that, but they're not going to be able to taste the soil that it came from. in our particular process. I think there are many other distilleries that are really focusing on that, and they're doing some really cool stuff, and I hope they continue to. Just at our particular distillery, that's not what we're focused on. It's not what we're hanging our hat on.
And sort of in closing, I wanted to kind of ask, what are some of the greatest lessons you've learned in the past 2 to 3 years?
In the past 2 to 3, in the past 2 to 3 greatest lessons, you should, if you're going to build a distillery, have access to city sewer. That's a big one. That we're a rural distillery. And so, we're always fighting the battle of, you know, wastewater, which I know there are many other distilleries in the United States that I meet with all the time. That's just kind of a running joke, within the distilling community is having somewhere to send your water as opposed to holding it in tanks because it's a big expense. But no, joke aside, I mean, I think the most important lesson I've learned is that it's a team game. And if you don't have a good team, you're not going to have a good product. You're not going to have a good brand. It's surprising. It would truly surprise people how much teams influence all the way from the person at the top all the way down to a part-time worker who works just a couple hours a week. They all play a very specific role. They're relied on, they matter, and they contribute to your brand's development and the overall success of your product in general. So the most important thing I've learned is that the team is important. You know, you oftentimes see a head distiller like me, you know, kind of representing a brand and educating people on it, but that person is no more than like a coach of a baseball team. You know, there's a bunch of players on that team, all that have a specific impact, and they make a difference. But the coach does the press conference at the end of the day, and that's something that I feel very strongly about, is that a product is only as good as the entire team that makes it.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Murphy Quint for joining us. You can learn more about Cedar Ridge at cedarridgedistillery.com. And distillers and designers, don't forget to enter the Craft Spirits Packaging Awards at americancraftspirits.org or craftspiritsmag.com. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.